Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Heartland Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in economics and business. This is Principles of Microeconomics, Econ 101, Section 1 for Spring Semester 2012. Lecture 25, delivered on May 8th, 2012. The title of this lecture is Review for the Final Exam.
Today, review for the final exam. 100 questions, 1 hour and 50 minutes. That means that you have a little less time per question than you had on the exams, the midterm exams. So you have to cruise a little faster. You'll recognize the material, definitely. There's nothing on the final that I haven't asked about in one way or another on an exam or a quiz, a midterm or a quiz. Certainly, you will see some of the same questions. I will pull questions straight off the exams, the midterms, and the quizzes. I'll put them on there. Sometimes I'll reorder the answers, but there will be some that you will recognize. They'll be the same question, the very same question. Maybe even half of the questions will be like that. Others, the same question, just worded differently. I've covered all of the objectives of the course, and so I want to make sure that you are simply showing me that you have met these learning objectives at this point. So there's nothing new in this. The big problem you'll probably have is more the first material than the last material, because we haven't talked about things like price elasticity of demand and all of that for a while. So let me revisit these topics briefly. First and foremost, you need to know the laws of economics that I gave you. The law of demand, the law of supply, the law of diminishing marginal productivity, the law of increasing marginal cost. Make sure you know those. I will ask about those. Those are fundamental concepts. You need to know from the first and second lectures about the origins of economics. Who was the founder of economics as a subject? What century was this in? What are the different economic systems? What is the fundamental question of economics? Let's try this. Sir, do you remember what's the fundamental question that economics addresses? Do you remember?
Yeah, it's me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you remember?
The three questions?
No, the fundamental question. There are three questions that come off that. The essentially operational questions are the three. But the fundamental question, as you search back in your notes, let me tell you. How do societies, how do people, businesses, households, industries allocate scarce resources among competing end uses? There are different ways that they could do it, but they have to answer three questions that are operational: what to produce, how to produce it, and for whom to produce it. Now, broadly speaking, there are three ways that societies organize to answer these three questions. They can do it by traditional, in a traditional economy, custom, common law, tradition, allocate the resources. They can do it in a command economy by having a central authority determine how the allocation works. Or they can do it in a market economy kind of way, where prices determine what to produce, how to produce it, and for whom to produce it. Know this. It's absolutely essential. The fundamental bottom bedrock of economics has to do with why we're bothering with this entire arcane subject. Let me get down to some basics here. Make sure you know the difference between demand and quantity demanded, supply and quantity supplied. I will test you back and forth to make sure that you know that. Again, know the difference between demand and quantity demanded, and supply and quantity supplied. In other words, if you and what would change quantity demanded versus what would change demand? What would change quantity supplied and what would change supply? Remember that quantity is changed just by the price of the product. So if the price of beef goes up, the quantity demanded will go down. It's a price. But if tastes and preferences for beef change, then the demand curve itself will shift. If the price of gasoline goes up, the quantity supplied of gasoline will increase. But if an alternate energy source comes available for cars, well, then that would change the supply as companies began to shift their production towards something that made them more money. So know the difference between supply and quantity supplied, demand and quantity demanded. What changes them? Like demand, quantity demanded is changed by the price of the product. Demand itself is changed by other factors, income, tastes and preferences, prices of substitutes and complements. Know that. That was early material, and like I said, it's always of concern to me that we don't talk about it later in the courses, hardly at all, and so it kind of slips off your radar. Now it comes back for the final exam. Study that material, study the quizzes that I gave you early on. That will refresh your memory quite well. Well, at least it'll scare you, possibly. Bear with me one quick second here. I want to check one. Okay. I will, you'll have several graphics on the final you will have seen on quizzes and exams. Like, for example, when I remember I showed you those two graphs, demand curve sliding, and you had a shift down along a demand curve A, a shift up along a demand curve B, a shift outward in a demand curve C, and a shift inward in a demand curve D. And I gave you some scenarios, and you had to tell me which one of those, A, B, C, or D, was the one that was in operation. No doubt about it, that will be on the final. You will see that graphic, I promise you. It won't be anything fundamentally different from what we did before, what you did before, but I do want to tell you that will be there. You shouldn't have much of a problem. You've seen it before, of course. Give me a second here. I want to check one more thing here. I really should just put this up on the overhead so you can see the final exam. You wouldn't respect me in the morning if I did that. Sure we would. No, you wouldn't. Okay. Theory of the consumer. Make sure you know concepts like the law of diminishing marginal utility, the idea that even though more is preferred to less, as you get more, you get less extra satisfaction out of it. And there comes a point of consumer equilibrium where the extra satisfaction per dollar you spend on one product can fall below the extra satisfaction per dollar you get from another product. That's how we establish our equilibrium, where the two are about the where two or more products are about at the same level of marginal utility over price, based upon your ability to afford them. Your income always constrains how much you can get of each. So you have to do a balancing act. As far as the theory of the consumer goes, again, just make sure you understand utility, marginal utility, that consumer price equilibrium that I had talked about in the one lecture. Price elasticity. Make sure you know your formula. I'll have let me qualify that. You will have that formula sheet. Remember on the first exam there was a formula sheet at the back. I'll have that on this exam so that you don't have to memorize that or anything like that. You do get a note card, a 4x6 formula card for this exam, by the way. You have your formula card. But don't waste a lot of time trying to write down the formula. Know how to use a formula. So if I were to say, all right, when the price of gas went up 15%, quantity demanded fell 5%. Okay. Now, there are several questions I can pull from just that statement right there. Just that right there alone. I can pull a number of questions out. Well, for one thing, what's the price elasticity of demand? Well, remember, price elasticity of demand is the absolute value of the percent change in quantity demanded divided by the percent change in price. And I gave you the percentages here. You won't have to calculate the percentages on in the exam, but I gave it to you here. So we've got the absolute value of percent delta Q, which is fell 5%, negative 5%, over percent delta P, which is positive 15%. So you have the absolute value of negative 0.33, which is 0.33. So this is price inelastic. Anything between 0 and 1 is price inelastic. Make sure you know that. Between 0 and 1 is price inelastic. The other thing that I can ask you is, okay, if the gasoline does this, will the gas company increase its revenues or will it lose revenue from this move? You need to know that. What would you say on that? Woman? What would you say? It will increase it because the loss of customers was considerably less than the gain in price. So in this case, any time when you jack up the price and it's price inelastic, you gain revenue. You've lost some customers, screw them. You made a lot more on the price. Business is not where you make friends, it's where you make money. That's a good statement. I like that. I'll have to. Yes. Remember, there was a story. There's a famous story. If you want, when a new politician comes to Washington, the old line is: if you want friends in Washington, buy a dog. Someone mentioned that to Bill Clinton when he first came to office. He was having real problems with Congress, attacking him. He was a young president. And some reporters on a TV interview told him that. Clinton looked at him and said, buy a dog? I have a cat. It's neutered. Is that why I'm having all these problems? Yes. You should have gotten a dog. Instead, he got a cat named Sox. Yeah, he got a dog. I mean, there's political savvy. Unfortunately, he got a dog that wasn't exactly the most common kind of dog, which increased the criticism of him as an elitist. Some kind of Australian water dog or something like that. I don't know. But, know what causes price inelasticity of demand, or what drives price elasticity. Like, for example, addictive products are price inelastic. Jack up the price, people still buy them. Other things, if there are a lot of close substitutes for a product, it will be price elastic, because if you try to move the price, everyone will run away. Okay. Other things that can drive price elasticity, necessities, addictiveness, things like that. Yeah. But know some of the factors that know the factors that drive price elasticity. Oh, and also make sure you know about income elasticity as well. Remember that there are normal and superior goods, which when your income goes up, the percent change in income is up, leads to a percent change in demand, not even quantity demanded, just demand goes out. In other words, if your income goes up, you want more of this stuff. Now, the difference is the degree of the effect. For most products, they're normal. In other words, if your income goes up by 10%, percent delta, the income is, let's say, 10%, your percent change in demand, it's positive, but it's less than 10%. In other words, you buy a little more, maybe a little better quality, but it's not some dramatic change. Now, for superior goods, a given change, percent change in income, will cause an excessive jump in the demand for the product. Give you an example here. Sir, what kind of men's facial makeups do you use?
None.
You don't? Well, obviously. You know what I mean. But when you are making lots of money, you will actually look at products like that. You will consider them. This makes my face creamy and soft and manly. You will buy things like that, you see, or it's possible. We'll see that spike in demand. Even though your income might go up by maybe only about 50%, your quantity demanded of those will, your demand for those will go up by a dramatic amount. Certain types of cosmetic surgery are very much like this. So too are other things too. Like, for example, do you own a boat? Well, you will someday. When you make maybe 50% more money, your percent change in demand for boats will go up by much more than that. Possibly. I don't know. You look sort of like you could be a bass fisherman kind of guy. I don't know. But that's what happens with some products. So those are superior. Now, the other animal is this inferior good class, where when they go in opposite directions. The percent change in income goes in the opposite direction to the percent change in demand. So, for example, spam. When you're poor, you buy spam. When you're rich, you don't. White Castle cheeseburgers. When you're poor, you buy them. When you're rich, you don't have time for cramps and gas. Things like that. There are so many products in this category, though, that we move away from products as our income goes up. We move towards them as our income goes down. For example, crack cocaine. is an inferior good. Powder cocaine is a superior good. And of course, we also see usually laws and taxes are aimed at inferior goods, simply because the politically weak will just eat the tax. Great example of that is cigarettes. Just now there's talk, well, we're going to raise a tax on cigarettes again because it's a health problem, you know. Bullshit. They can make money off poor people because they don't vote with their dollars like that. They don't have that sense. Same is true of malt liquor. Malt liquor is a drink of the poor. Fancy wines are a drink of the rich. So you would, Herb Deluxe, you would buy when you're poor. Chateau Neuf de Derrière or whatever is a wine what you would buy when you are rich. You see. Inferior goods have the perverse effect of actually acting against the substitution effect. Now, which means that with normal and superior goods, their demand curves tend to be more elastic because of the income effect. With inferior goods, they tend to be more inelastic. They work against the substitution effect because as the price goes up, you move away from the product, but because you're poor when the price went up, you move back toward it a little bit. The extreme example of that are Giffen goods. Remember these. Giffen goods are the ones that actually have demand curves that are slightly positive. As the price goes up, you see people actually buy more of them. It can lead to mass starvation in extreme cases. The price if Giffen goods occur when some inferior good dominates a household budget. It can cause when the price of it goes up, people stop buying everything else and just blow all their income on the basic good that's going up in price, which can lead to starvation because then they don't, or malnutrition because they don't have the money to buy all the things that went around that one focused product, like rice or potatoes or something like that, or corn. So make sure you know about that kind of, all that important stuff. Supply and demand dynamics. Make sure you know about supply and demand dynamics. If supply increases and demand decreases, what happens? Equilibrium price, equilibrium quantity. I will ask it. Easily 5 questions on the final will just be, if demand increases while supply decreases, what happens to equilibrium price and equilibrium quantity? I will ask you a question or two about auctions, Dutch versus English auctions. I will ask about price ceilings and price floors. Price ceilings lead to shortages. Price floors lead to surpluses. I will ask about it. Theory of the firm. I will definitely ask you some questions about, remember these questions, go back. They'll be very similar. The ones where you have to use the formulas, total cost equals variable cost plus fixed cost. So total cost over quantity equals variable cost over quantity plus fixed cost over quantity. So ATC equals AVC plus FC.
But those formulas will be given.
You will have that same formula sheet from the first exam. It will be there at the end of the final. So you don't have to write these down. They'll be there for you. Just know how to use them. You did those like a boss on the first, I think it was the first exam. You did those really well. And I'll just revisit those on the second exam too. Basically the same questions. Actually, honestly, they are the same questions. I just go in and change the numbers. They usually come out to be whole numbers. I try to make sure that they don't come out to be weird or anything like that. But it's just the same question, just different numbers. Make sure you know about marginal cost and marginal that kind of stuff. Now, on this exam, there will be a on this exam two. You had one of those pictures. You had it on a quiz, and you had it on the exam where you have a picture of the market. And I said, "Well, where's perfect competition price? Where's the monopoly price?" It will be on the final. You'll have one of those again. Guaranteed satisfaction. You will have it. I will also, on this exam, give you a table partly filled in. You'll have to fill in the rest of it and then tell me where profit maximization is for a monopolist and for perfect competition. In other words, I'll give you quantities and prices 0 through 15, and I'll give you the total cost. And what you have to do is find revenue, marginal cost, and then tell me where the monopolist would produce. Remember, that's the last place. For the monopolist, that's the last place where the marginal revenue is at least as large as the marginal cost. And then for the perfect competitor, perfect competition, it's the last place where the price is larger than the marginal cost. Because in perfect competition, price is marginal revenue. So again, I'm going to give you a table. You have to fill in. I'll give you numbers along it to help you along. And then you have to just work out the rest of it and give me a couple of answers. I'll give you a picture like this. I'm going to show you. I think I did this on the first exam. I can't remember. I'm not looking at the first exam right now. It was one where I gave you the cost curves. And AVC, ATC, and marginal cost. And I said, all right, we got some different points here. A, B, C, D, and E along the marginal cost curve. And I said, all right, for example, where is short run survival? That would be between B and D. Where would zero economic profit occur? That would be D. What's your shutdown point? That's B. Where is there economic profit being made? That's E. Okay? That will be on there. I'll just simply ask you for some of the hallmark points or regions. Nothing too fancy. Now, this one will be on there again. This is actually my gift to you. Why? Because I love you. No, I don't. But what the hell? Pretend. Oops, that sucks so bad. Let's draw this. I will show you the four cost curves on a picture. Just like I did on the first exam. And I will ask you to tell me, I'll label them, and I'll say which one's the marginal cost curve, which one's the average fixed cost curve, which one's the average variable cost, average total cost, just like I did on the first exam. Four questions, they are yours to get, they are so easy, I'm embarrassed to give them to you. But what the hell? You're my friend. No, you're not. See, you will not go home empty-handed. You'll have 8 points, or you'll have 4 points on the final. Be sure you know about the relationship between marginal cost and marginal revenue. Remember that when you have a marginal curve and an average curve, that the marginal curve, that when the margin is below the average is falling. When the margin is above the average is rising. Know that. I will ask it. I did on a quiz. I did it on the first exam. I will ask it again. And even more specifically, just like I did on the first exam, you got your average variable cost curve, your average total cost curve, AVC, ATC. You got your marginal coming through. That you can actually have a place where the average variable cost has begun to rise, but the average total cost is still falling. Make sure you see that. But if I told you that the average total cost was rising, unambiguously the average variable cost will be rising. Know that relationship. I did that. It's subtle. As I recall, you actually did pretty well on that. It's somewhat subtle. Okay. Just to go through, make sure you know the memory work, the laws, antitrust laws, just like on the second exam. Labor law and early labor history, yeah. Make sure you know the Industrial Recovery Act of 1933 was shot down by Congress. Well, it was shot down by the Supreme Court, and FDR swung right back around with Congress, and National Labor Relations Act of 1935 was passed. What the provisions of it are. Make sure you know about insurance, risk adverse selection, risk pooling, moral hazard. Know all those terms. Do the memory work. In this class, as I have counted it, and I've always wanted to go back and count it again, but my estimate was from some time back, I counted a total of 112 words or terms in this course, just terminology. Everything, predatory pricing, loss leaders, per se violations, performance versus structural, all those terms that are part of economic thinking. And make sure you know about long-run average cost curves, where economies of scale are, diseconomies of scale, constant returns of scale, minimum efficient scale of output. Now, this was not comprehensive or exhaustive, but this gives you a good place to start. Just go down through what I've said here. Make sure you know these things and you'll be in pretty good shape. But like I said, I didn't cover everything. Do you have questions for me about this final exam? You will be here 1 week from today at 8 o'clock. Remember, be perky. Eat breakfast. That's all I have for you today and for this semester. I thank you.